Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello, and welcome to the seventh episode of Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm Carl Nordgren. I'm going to start, as I always have, with my email, carl@creativepopulist.com. This is my request that you send me any thoughts, ideas, suggestions you have for improving the quality of the show. We're going to spend today exploring your creative subconscious. And again, I'm going to begin, as I have the last couple of episodes, with a story. And this story is going to show you how completely and how even passionately I believe in and have been served by my intuition, by the complex workings of my subconscious. For this story is about the single most important event of my life, and it was brought about by my subconscious immediately insisting, telling me the truth about what it was that I wanted. I was married just a couple of days after I graduated from college back in 1973. I went to a small liberal arts school, Knox College, and the farmland of Western Illinois. A wonderful woman. We wound up being married for 7 years. We were married 7 years because we didn't want to get divorced when we first realized we should, because all of our parents, all parents and all older siblings had all been divorced, and we had many younger siblings, and we wanted to show them that not every marriage needs to end in a divorce, a bad reason to stay married. We finally acknowledged that, and we did get divorced. The court date was on a Tuesday. Later that same week, I flew from Chicago down to Dallas to meet a client. My brother was getting his PhD at Texas A&M in veterinary medicine, so I called him and I said, "Hey, Bob, how about if I come down after my meeting and we go camping for the weekend and we commemorate this change in my life?" And we were able to pull that together. I flew into Bryan, Texas on a Friday night. It was dark. We couldn't go camping then, of course, so we went to a bar on our way to Bob's apartment. And as Bob retells it, we were somewhere in our second beer, and I was looking at the door of the bar, Grins, and it had actually saloon swinging doors. And finally, we were talking about the divorce, and I was in the process of saying to my brother, "Hey, look, I have never lived an independent life as an adult. I've always been married. I think I'm going to probably take some time and be on my own for a while and explore what it's like to be a single man. And maybe I'll never get married." And I was saying maybe I'll never get married, according to my brother, when into the door walked a young woman. And by the time she took a step into this place, folks, by the time she took a step into this place, I was saying to myself, "I'm going to marry that woman." And by the time she walked a short distance to her table, I turned to my brother and I said, "I'm going to marry that woman." I gave her a respectful interlude where she could sort of settle in at her table. I went and I joined her. She was sitting there with a friend. I came back after about 5 minutes and I said, "Bob, you're going to be very, very angry with me, but I'm not going camping this weekend. I'm going to spend as much time as I possibly can getting to know this young lady." And folks, I did. And folks, the only thing that kept me from asking her to marry me that weekend was the fact that, of course, I would have had to explain to her that I had just gotten divorced a couple of days later, and that would scare her away. But I finally did ask her to marry me. And when we were walking down the aisle in the Episcopal Church, St. Mark's in Beaumont, Texas, I realized that we had been in each other's presence 17 days, and in October we will have been married for 42 years. And so what I come to understand is in those couple of seconds that I watched her walk in, my subconscious unpacked and mashed up and related again and compared and contrasted my 29 years of memories and thoughts and plans and notions, and did it instantly. I've learned in my study of all things creative that in that moment, my conscious mind was processing roughly 50 bits of information, but my subconscious brain was processing 40 million bits of information. And folks, that's one of the more conservative estimates from neuroscientists about the difference in processing power between your subconscious and your conscious brain. I've even seen one study that suggests that your subconscious processes 400 billion bits of information in the time that it takes your conscious brain to process 400 billion bits versus 2000. There's just so much creative benefit that your subconscious can deliver if you let it. So let's try to understand it a little bit better so that we can influence it. We can't direct it. I don't believe we can direct it in a command and control directed fashion, but we can surely influence it. We can cultivate it, nurture and invite it in a climate control fashion. And thinking about aspects of its performance will help you see where your influence can and should be most effective. And hey, folks, if you're out there saying to yourselves, well, I'm highly analytical, you see yourself as a highly analytical person, and you see yourself as probably perhaps less prone to creative, intuitive thinking, well, you know, I have an important insight for you in particular that will make the most sense and be most useful to you at the end of the show. And so I'll share it with you then. So again, the subconscious does many things, and while not all of it is related to your creative output, much of it is. For what it does is constantly study patterns of life around you and absorb those patterns while comparing them to others as it happens. And it's continually monitoring all of our motives and our thoughts and our experiences and our memories, continually relating new with old, contrasting unusual occurrences with what was expected, looking for patterns in your constructed memories and experiences and natural predispositions. So as we begin to respect the role that the subconscious cognition plays, you know, let's think about this for a second. There must have been a time when it was our only cognition, yeah? There are many diverse views on when human consciousness began, but most believe that there was a time before self-awareness, before we achieved what we consider to be consciousness, when we were in a pre-conscious state. And at that state, what our brains were all about is finding patterns in nature. And think of all the complex patterns that there are in nature, daily patterns, lunar patterns, seasonal patterns, annual patterns that change depending upon your elevation, right? So our brains were all about constantly understanding those extraordinarily complex patterns. I worked in the 60s with Ojibwe Indians up in Northwest Ontario, and they had a word for what we're talking about here. It was Minogi, the special wisdom where you understand the patterns of nature that promise abundance and learn to live your life in accordance with those patterns. That must have been what our brains were all about before we accomplished consciousness in a pre-conscious state, all that is now subconscious, and we're going to talk more about it when we come back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. So even when we're not conscious of our sensual life, even when we're not conscious of the sensations around us, I mean, you're listening to my voice, consciously listening to my voice, but there's other sounds around you that you're not aware of, that you're not conscious of, but your subconscious is, and it's absorbing those sounds, and it will alert you if it needs to about something unusual about what are those sounds. You're not conscious of how it feels to sit in the chair until perhaps I bring your attention to it, but your subconscious is absorbing the sensual sensations that it feels from being sitting in that chair. Our visual inputs, boy, oh boy, lots going on there, man. Perhaps you know this, but 50% of the processing power of our brain when our eyes are open, 50% of the processing power is attending to managing visual inputs. What you look at, we finally see when it's been processed way in the back of our brain, right? That data travels as far as any possibly can travel in your brain. It gets all the way, what you look at finally gets seen in the back of your brain. And by the time it gets there, it's gone through four different sort of way stations along the way that attends to different aspects of vision, speed, color, spin, different depth, different aspects of it. And what it's doing along the way, folks, is it's scrubbing out the data that was unexpected and filling in the data that was expected. So when we talk about status quo, that's very much what's happening, right? Your brain tries very hard to serve up to you what you expected to see. Now, one very useful way to benefit from all of that processing power in your creative work is through incubation. In fact, it might be the most useful way to benefit from your subconscious's processing power. It might be the single best way that we benefit. It might be the best place to focus your climate control efforts, right, to get the full benefit that that powerful cognition can give you. I've done the research on the research, folks. 39 studies, neuroscience studies, have been undertaken to determine if incubation works. 29 of the 39 studies found conclusively that there is benefit from incubation. And I'm sure you have a sense of what we mean by incubation. You first focus on the project, focus on the problem, focus on the situation, get used to it, right? Really get it into your brain. Then intentionally set it aside. There's that word intentional. Intentionally focus on something else for a period of time. Now, there's disagreement with neuroscientists as to what is happening, but again, it's clear that good focus on your problem followed by intentional focus elsewhere for a period of time will result in an improvement in the quality of your creative thinking. Now, how much time do you want to look away? Well, it depends. Are you well into the development of this project? Maybe you're even into execution, but something's gone kind of stale maybe. Something's a little off. Something's not quite fitting. Well, if your thinking has been that mature and you're moving that far along, well, your incubation period probably doesn't need to be more than an hour or two. But are you still very early in the project? Are you still generating the initial ideas, generating the initial strategies that's going to inform this big project, this new venture, this new initiative that you're working on? When it's that instance, when you're in the early stage, 48 hours of focus elsewhere, 48-hour incubation period creates a really strong spike in measurable benefits in improving both the quantity and the quality of your ideas. And that probably tells us something really important about how we ought to be running brainstorming sessions, yeah? We don't run them quite right. We set them up properly, right? We bring people in and we say, here's the current situation. Here's the problem we're facing. Here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here are the resources that we've got to our avail. Here's the timeline for when we need to be able to identify an idea that we're going to act on. Now let's start generating ideas, right? That's how we typically do it. No, what we ought to do is all of that setup work, the current situation, a statement of the challenge, a meeting of the minds of what it is we're trying to accomplish here with this brainstorming effort, but then excuse people. Tell them to go back to their job, back to their home, back to a walk in the woods, and bring them back together 48 hours later. And again, research shows that the quality of the ideas that'll be generated in that brainstorming session that's been delayed will improve significantly. Some improvement at 24 hours, if that's what practical reasons you have to get back together in 24 hours, you'll get some improvement in 24 hours. You get strong improvement at 48 hours. So let's share some practical climate control tips about how to nurture your creative subconscious and how to improve the likelihood that it will work for you. Boy, how many times have I said to you in the show already, here we are just in the seventh episode, that there's great benefit in listening closely to new ideas. Listening generously, listening appreciatively to new ideas. They become yours when you do, when you bring your undivided attention to that new idea that somebody is sharing with you. That new idea becomes yours. It becomes part of the creative mashing that is churning and learning that's always taking place in your subconscious mind. Steve Jobs identified this when he said, creativity is simply connecting the dots. Make sure you have lots of dots. Well, you're gaining new dots when you listen closely to new ideas. When you're facing a new challenge, trying to master new knowledge, if you really want to get those 40 million bits or more of processing power working for you sooner and better, then don't start by studying it, this problem, this challenge, this opportunity. Don't start by studying it. Start by getting used to it. by getting used to it, live with it, walk through it, walk with it, smell it, touch it, taste it, watch it move, listen to what other people are saying about it, and also listen to how you want to talk about it. Get used to it. First, get used to it, then study it. Because you see, our brains work best when we move from acquiring a sense of the whole to an understanding of the specifics, right? First, understand the forest, and we will be much better at understanding the trees. So first, get used to it when you're trying to master new knowledge, and that really gets your subconscious mind fully informed, right? To get all that sensual sensation from the touch, from the smell, that really gets your subconscious primed and now ready to develop, to deliver, to generate great new ideas for you. Here's a tip on how to know what your subconscious is trying to tell you. If you're trying to make a decision between two options and your conscious mind just can't decide, you might know this one already, flip a coin, right? Heads, you're going to do A. Tails, you're going to do B. Flip a coin, and when it comes down to heads, and that means you're going to do A, are you happy with that? Well, then your subconscious mind is telling you that is what you want to do. Are you unhappy with that result? Then that's your subconscious mind saying, you're not happy with this. That's not really who you are. That's not really what you want to do. I'm going to tell you how Ben Franklin handled this when we come back from the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
So, folks, welcome back. We're going to listen to Samantha Shadd. We listened to her last week. This is the same thing that she said last week. We're going to replay Samantha. It was very useful for our show last week. Boy, it is spot on this week. Samantha, if you didn't hear last week's show, Samantha's a friend of mine. Samantha was a very successful screenwriter, both television and film. She's a great writer. She's got a book out called The Right to Happiness, W-R-I-T-E. I love this book, The Right to Happiness. Here's Samantha.
This is Samantha Shadd. I'm an author and a Hollywood screenwriter. I specialize now in creative writing and well-being, and I'm the author of two books on writing and happiness. If you're stuck, then the first thing to do is stop trying. That's right. Walk away from your desk or your painting or whatever and take a break. And even though this sounds counterintuitive, it's very important because creativity is not rational. So if you're stuck and you're trying to think through a problem, you're not going to find a creative answer. The other part of why taking a break is important is if you go for a walk or walk in a garden or take a bike ride, you disengage your executive network in your brain and engage something called the default mode network, which is what your brain is doing when it's not working on something. And the great thing about the default mode network is that's where your creativity lives. So by just walking outside and not trying, you allow and help your creativity to come through with a real answer.
So some different language than the language I use to describe what goes on, how you get out of your conscious mind into your subconscious mind, but a very nice picture of how to practically do that, right? How to attend to moving into your subconscious, getting your subconscious to work for you. A couple more thoughts about it. Again, for you folks that are highly analytical, I promise to a word on your intuition that's about to come. But first, when you have benefited from an intuitive leap, right? When your subconscious mind has suddenly served up an idea to you, what I've learned over the years is that I can't expect other people to take that same intuitive leap with me, right? I have to rationalize the journey for others. A few years back, while I was still teaching at Duke, I came up with, you know, I all of a sudden had this intuitive leap that millennials, and all I did was teach millennials when I was at Duke. I had millennials from the first year I was there through the 14th year I was there. I was pretty much following the millennial generation through Duke University. And I had a flash, an intuitive leap that they were destined as a generation to be the first great creative generation. I think they are becoming the first great creative generation. And that came to me as an intuitive leap. Well, I realized I had to rationalize that for other people. And I came up with three or four rational justifications for believing that this was true about this generation. For instance, one of them was that they had lived through so much change where so many status quos were being destroyed as they were maturing that they were less captivated by the status quo. Or the idea, of course, that they were digital natives and not digital tourists. And so they played with digital technology. And so they would bring that same playful attitude to their continued use of digital technology. So I do believe that the millennials, by the way, as an aside, are achieving their destiny of being our first great creative generation. So, okay, you analytical folks, when you're facing a new project, you're facing a new challenge, and the first thing you want to do, if this describes you, is really understand the data, right? Get in there and understand all the data that you can, right? So this close, conscious analysis of data sets can lead to the situation where you get the sense that there's something not quite right, right? There's an anomaly in the pattern. What's coming next is not what you expected what was going to come next. And in that moment where you just get this intuitive sense that there's something not quite right in this data, that's where you see opportunity, right? That's where you get some new, fresh insight into what is going on here so that you can bring new creative thinking. So I'm fully convinced. I often meet people who say, oh, no, I'm not creative. I'm too analytical to be creative. No, that analytical, you know, that close analysis of information and of data leads to new insights into patterns that lead to new insights as to what you can be doing under these fresh new situations, under these new circumstances. So let's close with a couple of comments. I've recently begun writing a column for chapelboro.com. You'll find my first column on the website. It talks about my creative life really beginning here in Chapel Hill. I didn't come here to this area till I was 30 years old, soon after I married my wife that I talked about at the beginning of the program. About a year later is when we headed down here. She is from Texas, and she didn't like the cold, cold winters that we were having in Chicago, so we headed on down this way. And this is where my creative life really began, working for Billy Carmichael at Carmichael McNeely, getting to meet Jim Protzman and Steve Lerner and Alan Norris through Billy Carmichael. That just had such a profound impact on my creative life. So I hope that you'll enjoy that article. There'll be many more to come. And again, folks, if there's any way that you think that this show can be improved, any thoughts that you have about what we can do to make this a better show for you, please send me an email, carl@creativepopulist.com. I'll look forward to your comments. Thank you very much, Samantha, for helping us out here again today. And I'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren.